This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonzel, and Chuck Norris counted to infinity twice. Chuck Norris can slam a revolving door. Chuck Norris can pop a wheelie on a unicycle. Chuck Norris's tears cure cancer. Unfortunately, Chuck Norris never cries. Chuck Norris was bitten by a king cobra. After 5 days of excruciating pain, the snake finally died. Chuck Norris went skydiving once. I don't think it was with Keith Perkins, but maybe. His parachute didn't open. The next day, he went and got a warranty replacement. That and more after a word from our sponsors, Pico Technology, Autel, and Independent Wrench Jobs. Tired of guesswork in your auto diagnostics? Need to pinpoint faults quickly and accurately? Picoscope will turn your PC into a powerful diagnostic tool. See live waveforms from sensors, injectors, and ignition systems. See the problem? Solve it faster. Visit PicoAuto.com. That's PicoAuto.com. Autel delivers award-winning automotive diagnostic tools trusted by technicians across North America. Backed by Autel North America experts in sales, training, and technical support. From drivability diagnostics and TPMS service to ADAS and advanced safety systems, Autel helps technicians follow OEM procedures and repair with confidence. Learn more at autel.com. Sponsored by Independent Wrench Jobs, tech-only jobs, no runaround. Built by Technician Find, helping tech since 2017. Join free at independentwrenchjobs.com. So by now, you probably have known or have heard that the unthinkable has happened, that Chuck Norris finally passed away. And I don't know about finally. It's not like he's been on his deathbed or anything like that for very long. As far as I know, I don't think he had any real health concerns. He was 86, which I don't know. Is that a good run? I think that's a pretty good run. I guess, I don't know. I suppose the closer you are to 86, the less good of a run it is. But yeah, it was a bit of a shocker. I don't know. You know, it's fun to joke around that he would have lived forever. But the reality is, I don't know that any of us really saw it coming, because when we saw interviews with him or stuff like that, he was still active and doing stuff and had his wits about him and everything. And yeah, it sounded like a medical emergency landed him in the hospital. Who knows what that is? And then, yeah, it seemed like he was good and then he wasn't. And people I know, and it's not like I just know so many people that work in the medical field or specifically in hospice or, you know, as in nursing, which is, I mean, it's still the medical field, but as nurses, you do hear about that though, about people that are not doing well and you're just waiting for, I guess, the news or when you finally go in there and they're gone, that they have a really, really good day or two or hours. Some really good hours where it's like, wow, they might pull out of this. That sounds like that could have happened. Otherwise, yeah, he decided that he wanted the Grim Reaper's job. I don't know. But I can't say that I was like a monster fan of his. His TV show, Walker, Texas Ranger. I think I saw a few episodes, but it just didn't do anything for me. I think one of the early ones, maybe it was probably season one, is where he, for the show, broke somebody's nose and they're complaining. Like, I think they said something like, oh, you broke my own nose or something to the tune of that. And then he grabbed it between his index and middle finger and straightened it out, said, there, I fixed it. And then he looked at him and punched him again and said, it looked better broken. I remember that. That was pretty good. Movies of his. I mean, honestly, I have seen a few of them. Yeah. I don't know how you don't. I was never the one to get really into the shoot 'em ups, I guess. So like the Delta Force, I didn't really get into that. And the Braddock, I think, trilogy, I didn't really get into that. Missing in Actions weren't my bag. I do remember distinctly hearing about his fight scene with Bruce Lee and what I thought was Game of Death, but it sounds like it's had a few different titles. I'm pretty sure I remember it being Game of Death, and I watch that. It's fun to watch. It's choreographed fighting, right? And I think nowadays we're a little tainted in that, or biased now, that we see kind of live, real fighting, if you will, martial arts with MMA, that now the fight scenes just sometimes come off overproduced and not realistic. But I don't know. It sucks. And I guess the reason I even bring it all up is obvious. If you've been following the Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z Facebook page, you'll know, or if you haven't noted, it'd be cool if you checked it out. Every Friday, I try to put up a Scott Manifact. And the Scott Manifacts are based heavily off of, or I should say based heavily. Some of them are directly based heavily off of a Chuck Norris joke, but they're inspired by that and also inspired by a bit, I guess, with Jimmy Kimmel Live, or I think that's what it was called, when he first got going. I liked it. I liked Craig Ferguson better and Conan O'Brien better, but I thought the Jimmy Kimmel stuff was okay. And he did a thing just out of the blue. Just, I don't know if he even knows why, but the show's ratings weren't all that great. And he was just thinking, like, what's something I could say just off the wall? And maybe some people would look into it. Maybe if I get enough time and chances to say it, people will laugh at it. It'll just be that thing. Kind of like, I don't know, Johnny Carson in that golf swing at the beginning. Jimmy Kimmel at the end of his show said, "I'm sorry, my apologies to Matt Damon. We ran out of time. Unfortunately, we ran out of time." You know, implying that Matt Damon was back in the green room waiting to get on to be interviewed by Jimmy Kimmel. Turns out Matt Damon thought it was pretty funny and leaned into it, and a friendship formed. And you kind of get a song from Jimmy Kimmel's, I think, then ex-girlfriend. I think they were exes by then. I don't know how important it is for that to be accurate, to be honest. Then ex-girlfriend Sarah Silverman wrote a song about that while she was dating Jimmy, that she was actually spending quality time with Matt Damon. For which Jimmy then responded with his own song and video of he was spending some quality time with Ben Affleck. Anyways, the whole point was, I thought it'd be just kind of funny out of the blue. And it was partially out of the blue. I was in a episode, I think, with Carm, with Scott Manna. And I consider Scott Manna a really good friend and a major, major influence and mentor. He's a now former shop owner of Ambiato in, I think it was Des Plaines, Illinois. It could have been Mount Prospect. It's like right on the line between the two. And successful shop. And he had won the AC Delco Technician of the Millennium Contest. And he's been a trainer, not only for automotive seminars and World Pack, but also done stuff, I think, with like Illinois Air Care. And that's had, I think, a few different names. But I think he did stuff with them. He wrote, I'm pretty sure he had a column, that one of the Chicago newspapers. I never got the paper, so. At least the Chicago one. So it's hard to know which one it was. Maybe all of them. I met him at Lindertex down in Indianapolis, and I knew he was friends with John Thornton. And yeah, that's just kind of the beginning of it all. And I thought it'd be kind of funny when I introduced, because I asked Carm, please let me introduce Scott Manna. And so Carm made the mistake of letting me. And I led with like three or four Scott Manna facts, based heavily off the Chuck Norris jokes. That's really a combination of Jimmy Kimmel, Matt Damon bit, and the Chuck Norris jokes is how the Friday Scott Manna facts were born. And we've had some really good ones. I think we've had some really good ones. And I kind of have a team to help me focus or reel me back and also provide facts for me. So they're also doing research. It's a real highbrow group, and I wish that didn't sound as sarcastic as it did, but it's serious. I have Pedro De La Torre, I have Brian Pollock, and I have Justin Morgan, and that is a heck of a team researching anything, but they are researching Scott Manna facts and just off the cuff, some of the best ones. And I might be biased, I suppose, but one of the best ones is Scott Manna can fix battery parasitic drains with ivermectin. Another one is Scott Manna took Greta Thunberg to a, you know, like a environmental get together and left with his Duramax EGR deleted and DPF system removed. Stuff like that. Those are some really good ones. And amongst others, we could have all kinds of episodes of Scott Manna facts. We won't get rolling too much on those. But yeah, the Chuck Norris jokes. I mean, some of them are like silly, but I don't think they're that good. I find them to be a little sillier. Like Chuck Norris doesn't do push-ups. He pushes the earth down. You know, other stuff. Like he had to sue one of the TV channels because for the title Law and Order because his left fist was named Law and right fist was Order. I like the other ones kind of like that I led with. Those make me laugh hysterically. Or after Chuck Norris was born, he drove his mom and dad home from the hospital. Chuck Norris built the hospital he was born in. Stuff like that. Chuck Norris uses a flashlight, not because he can't see in the dark, but because the dark is scared of Chuck Norris. Kids check under their beds for the boogeyman. The boogeyman checks under his bed for Chuck Norris. Stuff like that. I just get a kick out of that. Word twisting, phrase twisting. It's great. Is your shop ready for the electric vehicle revolution? Don't get left behind. The Picoscope EV Kit is your all-in-one solution. Diagnose any electric or hybrid vehicle, from high-voltage batteries to complex communication systems. With guided tests and pinpoint accuracy, you'll tackle more jobs and boost your bottom line. This isn't just a tool. It's your future. Be the expert in EV repair. Visit PicoAuto.com to future-proof your shop today. That's PicoAuto.com. This episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z is brought to you by Autel. Autel is a global developer and manufacturer of award-winning professional automotive diagnostic tools and service equipment, trusted by technicians, educators, and shop owners across North America. With diagnostics at their core, Autel's real-world solutions support repair workflows ranging from full system vehicle diagnostics to servicing the most advanced automotive technologies. What sets Autel North America apart is the team behind the tools. Dedicated experts across sales, training, and technical support, each bringing deep, hands-on experience supporting professional technicians. When questions arise, you're working with people who understand the vehicles, the procedures, and the real-world demands of modern repair. Whether diagnosing complex drivability concerns, servicing TPMS systems, validating repairs, or working with ADOS and advanced safety technologies, Autel tools are engineered to support accurate, efficient repairs in strict accordance with OEM procedures and standards. To learn more about Autel and their diagnostic solutions, visit autel.com, AUTEL.com. Ever feel like you've got to play politics just to get fed? One guy gets the gravy, you get the garbage, and then the ad says, great culture. Independent Wrench Jobs is a new, tech-only community to help you find better independent shops, fair dispatch, steady work, real leadership, no games. Start with the free salary survey for your city, shop-by-shop pay, perks, and benefits before you waste another interview. And if you're applying now, use Autotech Resume Pro to generate a resume and shop-specific cover letter in about 2 minutes. Built by Technician Find, serving the industry since 2017. Join free at independentwrenchjobs.com. Unfortunately, he didn't live forever. Unlike a character in the Marvel Universe named Deadpool, I suppose that's a terrible segue. But I got to level with you as kind of watching Deadpool and Wolverine. And there's something that Deadpool said very early in the movie. And I don't know if you've ever seen any of the movies. And I guess I'm not really concerned about just building up the character. That's not the important part. The important part really was he was interviewing to be on in the Avengers team with Captain America and Iron Man. If him and Captain America aren't on the outs, the Hulk, Thor, he's the interviewer is essentially Tony Stark / Iron Man's chauffeur, Happy Harrison. And Happy is asking these questions. And one of them was, why do you want to be an Avenger? And Deadpool essentially says, because I need it. Now, granted, that's a different story and type of things, but it made me think about it that he needed it for personal reasons, like for his ego or to feel worthy. And I don't mean like Thor worthy, the worthy type stuff. I just worthy, really, in the context of the movie, worthy in the eyes of his girlfriend, fiance, wife. The reason that I guess that triggered an idea with me, and the reason I bring it up and did the horrible segue from Chuck Norris tragically passing away to the character Deadpool essentially being eternal, that or immortal, is that when he said, I need to be part of the Avengers, what I was thinking is trainers, educators, that there's a lot of trainers / educators, and I don't, maybe at the college level, but I'm thinking more so at the professional level, that you get into it because of your ego. I need this for my ego. I need this just to feel like I'm something important, or I'm looked up to. I'm validated. And maybe that's it too with Deadpool. Like, he just needed the validation. Well, it takes some ego to get up in front of a group of people, strangers or otherwise. More importantly, is people that aren't strangers, ones that you know and who are well know, very knowledgeable. It wasn't my ego that pushed me through that, though. That was fear and obligation. And I had begged Sherry Hamilton to let me off the hook and bring somebody else in, because these guys are all way smarter than me. But yeah, there is a certain level of it that gets a certain level of ego, a certain level of drive that pushes you towards the education, towards the training. And that's like one of the main things that get people into it, because for the most part, don't have a good way to bring along people who are interested, or maybe even not so much interested organically, but somebody told them, like, that is a really cool case study, or, man, you do some really amazing things, or you have a really unique way of going about fixing cars or arriving at these diagnostic decisions or stuff like that. Your process, something like that, is worthy of sharing. You really should share that. So they themselves maybe and really never considered themselves an educator. Could never dream of getting up in front of a group of people and talking, much less presenting material and having a presentation like a PowerPoint or something of that nature, slides. So they're kind of urged to, and they never thought about it that way, but we don't have a good way of bringing those individuals along to become the next name your trainer. It doesn't matter who, honestly, just who's going to be on that roster. Honestly, it's difficult to urge somebody to take on a class by themselves. They've never really thought about being an educator. They haven't started to pattern themselves after any trainers. Like, they haven't attended a Scott Manna class. They haven't attended a John Thornton class. They haven't attended a Dave Scaler class. So now they're going to start saving like waveforms or building PowerPoints as their journals, if you will, like journaling their repair and their process. And if they aren't doing that, that's not like a criticism, but if they're just not, it doesn't dawn on them that they would ever do that and then use that as a way to present material, or they haven't been approached by a company that got wind of their skill set or the way they go about things, and then they reach out and say, hey, I've heard you have some really neat things or ideas or ways of doing things. I'd really like to see that, and buying presentations from them, like not 3-hour presentations, maybe buy case studies from them. We don't have a necessarily a great consistent way of doing that. And then urging somebody that you know is really smart or whatever, has a really interesting process, to then submit a class to some conference. Doesn't matter which one, but the classes are going to last at minimum 3 hours, some of them 4 hours on the shorter side, right? It's pretty rare somebody starts out with an 8-hour class, unless it's, you know, a portion of it or a lot of it's hands-on. That's a little different. That's rough. I think kind of back with the Deadpool thing, is that drive is usually like what pushes people to do that. But if you don't have that, and I don't know that that's always the best way to go about it, because the issue is there's a big delay of gratification, right? And how are you going to gauge it short of, I want to be standing up there and now I'm trying to read people's faces like, oh, do they like what I'm doing? You know, what's going on? Are they, am I putting anybody to sleep? And then at the end, what are you waiting for? You know, applause, sit back and read the reviews. It's a rough way to get a lot of validation. So now it becomes, why do it? And I think it's because you want to give back. I think it's because you want to help. I think it's because you do believe your voice is as important as anyone else's, especially if you have ideas and they're accurate, right? Like they've gone through some sort of process of people can assure you that they're at least applicable, right? Accurate enough to be applicable, right? That going back to my whole accuracy versus applicability, don't get me wrong. We could go down a major rabbit hole with accuracy, but the idea of my take, my perspective is has value. And it may speak to someone different than, say, a different instructor. You could both be presenting the same topic. Your angle is a little bit different than theirs, and yours hits certain people better for certain reasons. Theirs hits certain people better for certain, you know, for other reasons. I don't know. I thought that was kind of an interesting thing, sitting there listening or watching Deadpool 3 or Deadpool and Wolverine, hearing Wade or Deadpool in his interview say, like, I need it. And then just kind of thinking to myself, that just screams training to me. And how do we get those with good voices? And there's a lot of them, right? I'm not saying there's just so few. Like there's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of techs out there that they do have really good ideas. They do have really good content. Are they all going to be trainers? Maybe not. Could they all share? And by share, I mean, you know, in some cases or many cases sell. Like it has value. I'm not saying just give everything away. You could, but also I don't think that's necessarily the expectation. Maybe amongst a group of you, a small group with, you know, now I would think it would be a very assumed intellectual type property agreement with everybody. This will stay between us. And I share this because there's mutual benefits going on with they can help you, stuff like that. The reality is that the group of instructors we have is aging out. That's just the way it is. And it's normal and all that. But where's the next? Where are the new guys? Where are the new ones, the new women to come in and succeed them? I don't know if we're going to replace anybody, but who's going to succeed them? Where do we get them? And they're coming. I think for the most part, attendees like the ones coming from the bays. Okay. That's not saying if you're not in the bays, you can't be a good instructor. But in general, they like somebody with practical experience up there. And that when they're talking about something on the car, that's whoever they're talking to about it is more than just theoretical knowledge. It's there's some practical knowledge, be it maybe they didn't actually do the hands-on work on that particular system, but they work in a shop. They've seen it. You know, they've seen somebody do it. They've walked over and looked over their shoulder. They've heard about it, right? So it's a lot more practical. Is that the end all be all? Absolutely not. That's where some of our very best came from, is right from the bays. And they were still in the bays during their instructing careers. What's the path to get the people in the bays now in front of classrooms or in front of a group? I wish I could just rattle off an answer. The only answer I have is something that I started with Sherry Hamilton, that it's tech talks. I'm not trying to push tech talks over. It's not really, or I'm just not. I'm not trying to put it over. It's just one idea where, as much as the name sounds like it was a ripoff of TED Talks, it really wasn't. That never entered our minds. It was simply, how do you convey that? There's probably going to be multiple instructors. The instructors that are going to be presenting aren't actual presenters. They're straight out of the bays or very early on in their presenting careers. They're kind of in a safe place. Honestly, it's a safe place in there because one, they don't have to come up with all the material for the whole class. Two, if something goes sideways, there's people there to help them out. other instructors, myself, and I got to level with you. The attendees are ultra understanding because they could be next. I'm not saying I go around and like elect people, like you're selected. All right, you're up next year. That's not really what happens for the most part. Maybe if you're Zeb Beard and I did that to you, but it's not like I could force him to do it. And he did it, knocked it out of the ballpark. And he did it at Vision, and then he did it again at STX. It's volunteers. And if I hear about somebody, I'll reach out to them. That's one path that I can think of. And the other thing is, I think getting word out, if you have connections, you are at these conferences and you know somebody that's just very skilled, you know, they're just doing things in an interesting way, using a scope in a cool way, or found a new piece of equipment that's neat that not many people know about, or looking at data a certain way, or they have a very specific process that they follow that's very successful, that you get word to certain people, like specifically those involved in training. So one of the presenters for Tech Talks this year at Vision was Mike Blackaneri. And honestly, I don't know a better way to phrase it. I would say he was at least partially, if not mostly, discovered by Hawk and Light of Topdon. That started a way. That friendship, that relationship led to some presentations, led to Mike doing some really neat stuff online. That's one way. I think for mine, and I really have no intentions of turning this on me, but my path started, well, one was opening my big mouth. I was at a LenderTech conference and I had some criticisms about a presentation on a scan tool. And the next year I was the instructor for that scan tool. That was my introduction. And another way was, I would say, discovered, if you will, by Jeff Masterman of Standard Motor Products. And he just said, hey, man, if you throw together some PowerPoints, I would like to look at them and, you know, buy them from you, or potentially buy them from you. And that was a start. And I would put together PowerPoints and he'd ask questions or he'd give me advice. He'd ask for more information to put on the PowerPoint. Is the car still there? Could you get the car back? Could you get a photo of this? He would buy them and they'd put them in their training material. And that was kind of a foot in the door. And then I think through that and attending training and training conferences and getting to know Craig Schoenberger with what was CragTech at the time and became Pico USA allowed me to work for him for a few years. And because of that, do presenting and on PicoScope specifically. That's how that got rolling. That I don't know how, short of being able to be found by a company that would be willing to help and invest in like the case studies portion, I don't know that the rest of that is necessarily realistic for a larger number of individuals. Maybe, but it just seems more reasonable that, hey, I've bought quite a few case studies from you. They're really, really good. Have you ever thought about presenting? Or, hey, we're doing a instructor conference. Like, just pick your training entity. Okay. Doesn't matter who. Pick your favorite one. And they've purchased a few case studies, whatever that number is. What if we flew you in and had you present your case studies to our trainers, our educators, our traveling presenters? And then they can ask questions. They can get your insight on these. And then that could start the ball rolling with more presenting. Another idea, I think, of course, was those that are interested that we could, as a profession, start some sort of train the trainer entity where somebody is echoed or somebody wants to be an instructor that we could put them through a bit of a boot camp, stealing a word, I think, from CTI. I think they did call that boot camp. I don't think they have it anymore. It's probably patented. Now I owe them money, but that might be another idea. I don't know if I actually tied Chuck Norris and Deadpool together. It wasn't totally my goal. It really was just to, you know, acknowledge Chuck Norris as the inspiration for the Scott Manifax, you know, say some good things about him and remember some nice things about him. And then really this idea with the Deadpool 3 or Deadpool and Wolverine and Wade Wilson's desire to be with the Avengers, kind of being like wanting to be a trainer, but that we need to go after the people that aren't necessarily looking for that type of validation, but really do need their ideas shared and personalities in front of a group would be terrific. There's so many of them, so many. So I hope you got a kick out of that. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for the messages. I can't tell you how much they mean, and the emails, the ideas. I'm honestly touched by the feedback with the Mount Rushmores and the desire to hear more. That's freaking cool. I'm going to try to make good on that. Yeah. Thank you so much to our sponsors. None of this happens without them. Independent Wrench Jobs, Autel, and Pico Technology. Make sure you check all their stuff out. Yeah. Thank you to the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Bonslow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.